Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 266, my chat with French improviser Bertrand Anse. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why is brought to you by Audible. Sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to sign up and get your Audible account today. I love it and highly recommend it to y'all. Sign up today for Audible. Yes But Why podcast is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is the company that my husband and I started to help new podcasters find the right path for them. Go to podcastcadet.com and connect with us. We will do whatever it takes to help you on your way to improving your podcast. Your first consultation is free, but then after, when you're completely wowed by how much we want to help you, you can use promo code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. Let us help you. Podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with Bertrand Anse. Bertrand Anse is a skilled improv comedian and corporate team-building coach. He's also a certified cooking teacher, a musical composer, and an avid amateur astronomer. In our conversation, we talk about the exhilaration of performing on stage and how much we both miss it. Bertrand and I connect on our love of teaching improv and helping people become more confident. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 266. Improviser Bertrand Anse on learning to tell stories, not jokes. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was a curious child, but not funny kid.
No, very serious.
I discovered humor and jokes when I was a young adult. I saw people making jokes and it was funny. I tried to do like that, but it doesn't work at the first time. It's I made joke. I think it was fun. Absolutely not. Nobody's laughing, and so I try, and
you make a lot of people laugh.
Yes, I am. It's one of my ability. I'm very hilarious guy.
Yeah. Do you think it was a natural ability, or was it something you learned over time?
You have to learn. Maybe you have to understand rhythm of making jokes. You have to understand. Compare situations who can be funny, but now it's kind of natural for but you have to work on it. You have to take time to be good
at, yeah. When you were first doing, you know, making jokes as a kid, were there classes, you know, in school that were theater and comedy classes, or, you know, was it just hanging out with friends you were making jokes? Where did you get inspired?
There is no in school there is no classes not a lot classes of theater and not class of humor. So I discovered it with my friends, looking films or TV show or starting to make jokes about what is in front of us.
Did you see any like comedians or people doing stand-up in your, you know, when you and your friends were watching, was there stand-up that you also watched as well?
A few programs where there is a comedians, and it's for me very inspiring, and maybe not for my old friends. Didn't took the way of, they were not really interested in humor. They show, they laughed, but they were not interested of reproduce the humor mechanics. So I was alone, and I looked TV show where there is kind of stand up or sketches.
Were there a lot for you to watch?
Not a lot.
Right on. Yeah, I think I happened to find a lot more than, you know, other people did. I really liked Saturday Night Live, and so then I was looking. Also, I'm a big fan of like Eddie Murphy. So then Saturday Night Live with Eddie Murphy, Eddie Murphy's movies, and then I went to stand up through that path, right? And so then I was like, oh, other people do this too. And it was just a fun way for me to find, you know, styles of comedy and different kinds of movies. What were your favorite things when you were watching?
The first thing is a troupe called Robin des Bois, and they were playing half written, half improvised show, and they were totally crazy, no rules. It's a kind of punk theater, and I laughed. I really laughed. But actually, it's not a good show. There is no more. It's just crazy, but there is no story on which they can walk. So it's not currently the kind of show that are interesting me. It was a very good it was a very good formation. I love that, but no, I can't stand that.
I understand.
So
some of the comedy sketches that I loved growing up, now when I watch them too, I say, this is terrible. Why?
But why?
And
why?
Then, and then the weird thing also is that there are sketches I hated. I remember watching them and I was like, what? This is dumb. And then I watch them now and I'm like, oh, I get it. I see what they're trying to do. You know, it's like, it was too smart for me, I guess, at the time. So yes, I didn't get the joke. I was like, what are they talking about? And now I'm like, oh, they're talking. I get it. Okay. Okay. I'm an adult, so I get humor
funny,
now.
Funny. I love that.
It does change, though, the kind of comedy you like during the course of your life. Yeah, we start out a little crazier, you know, wilder stuff. And then, you know, if you study comedy, you're going to be interested in sort of one style, or you're going to hone the way you look at it.
Yes, and then, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe when we grow up, we assimilate rules that are that make a show more efficient, more punchy or interesting, and some rules you can really break because your show will be uninteresting. Maybe we have to admit that sometimes rules are a good thing.
Oh, no. What?
No, I can't.
No, we are rule breakers. We have established in this conversation, we are rule breakers. No, I get what you mean, though. So how then, we're talking about like it from our point of view now of how we know how a show gets run and how the vibe of that is. What was your way into performing? You had watched these shows, you were interested in comedy and performing, or at least in watching other people perform. How did you get involved?
So the first time I went on stage is not performing theater, but performing music. It was an awful show too. I was bassist in a group in campaign in France. It's kind of a redneck, but in French. we played music we make our first concert, and there were lots of rednecks coming up on stage doing some. This was horrible moment, but I like the first time of being exposed to people. The show was awful, but it was the first time in my life when I come on stage and facing people. So it's the first time. And when I were really involved in theater, it's when I show when I saw a show of improvisation, an improv show. My brother made improv during a year, and it was the end of the year show. So I discovered improv at this moment, and it was monumental shock. I really, really appreciate that. I mean, for me, it will be an excellent place for my sense of humor to be. And later, I learned to make stories and not jokes. It's way better now. But this show make me involved in improv.
Yeah, that's so great. I love that your brother was involved in the improv show, and that's how you got into it. I love that. That's so great. Also, to talk about your first onstage experience in the band. Wow. I love that the first audience experience was so intense, like, and that the crowd was like, because yeah. Honestly,
it's a bit of, with a beer.
Great. Yeah. Perfect first audience. Why? Because no audience will ever be worse. It can't get worse.
Not what? Sure of that.
Oh, no!
Not sure. No. I've got a lot of wrong experiment on stage.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes. I suppose I've seen some raucous audiences, but the idea that your first one was so crazy. I mean, I don't know did that make you nervous to get on stage again? Or were you thinking, oh, I can do this, so I can do anything?
As every show that I make, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
A little bit. Now I always have this, why am I doing that? I don't know the text. Why? And I forget all that I know. even my name. Why am I? and when I'm on stage in about 1 or 2 minutes, it's okay. It's fine. I know why I'm here.
I mean, I think that if you are able to get into an improv scene when you're acting in it, then you should be able to move past the fear and the nervous energy. I mean, I think everybody has nervous energy before a show. I've taught, like I said, I've taught improv for 10 years now. Every class I've ever had who did a show was nervous before the show. Admittedly, yeah. I do teach level one, so they are always nervous. But you know, even when I do shows with veterans, they are a little nervous in a different way, I guess. But yeah, everybody's nervous.
Yeah, the first time I knew I have to go on stage for improv during a fortnight before, I was afraid. 2 weeks before, I was what should I do? And no, it's just 1 hour, 1 hour before. It's just a little fear, but it's great. It's le trac in French. I think it's important to have that before to go on stage.
Yeah. Little adrenaline bump right before you get on stage. You're like, you know, get ready. I'm in.
So go. And
improv needs energy. Improv requires you to be, you know, present and connected, and those things are not quiet. Those things are not like, I'm fine. You know, if you are going to connect with your scene partners, if you are going to create something out of nothing, then, I mean, you have to have a little energy to be like, here's an idea. Here's an intention. Here's my support or whatever, you know. So you got involved with your improv. You were performing and, you know, you're nervous at the beginning. What was the first school like?
When I saw the show of my brother, he made it. He played in a team called Improdisiac. So I joined them the next year, and I begin. I don't like that wasn't good. Maybe because it was the first year, but I quit. I go to another classes, and it's way better because the pedagogy was better for me.
What was your favorite, or you know, a story of an interesting class you took?
In this class, we had the opportunity of making a real troupe, and we were encouraged, enhanced by our teacher to have our first team. That was a great moment. It was an important moment in my life. This troupe, I quit this troupe since. We are a good relation, but I do new stuff now, and we're not on the same energy. But it was great. It was like a music band, but in improv.
Yeah, that's really great that you got to be in your first troupe. And you know, the first troupe is formative for us all, for sure. I had a couple, you know, I hear you saying, I'm not in that troupe anymore, but I'm still friends with them, which I think is funny because, man, I have been through multiple troupes at this point. And I love everybody, but it's like, I can't imagine, you know, different styles that you go through as you're learning. You know, the people who I first performed with were kind of a disconnected crowd of people who all took classes around the same time. You know, we weren't all the same style or anything like that. Since this first troupe that you were in, have you have newer troupes now?
Yeah, in my new troupes, we work together on making shows. I create several shows, and we are working with not actually because it's a lockdown, so yeah. We can't do nothing. That's enough. And but we're working on something more artistic, involved us more.
More personal stories infused in the improv.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So we are working on souvenir, it's one of the show we are making. It's based on souvenir existed.
Is souvenir like a an object that somebody has that is personal?
Yes. But one of the show we made called Uncle Scott's Incredible Attic. we are emptying the attic of our deceased uncle. This uncle was an adventurer, an artist, is a little crazy, and he told us when we were kids stories of its adventure. And when we are emptying his attic, we're finding a book or an object, and we are, oh yes, remember he told us about this. It was a trip on a boat, and so we are creating, we are making the flashback of this story, and this the audience who brings his own object, and so we are making a new show every time.
Oh, awesome. I love that people bring things. That's great. Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, that's a great show style for sure.
I think the idea exists in lots of shows, but it's very good. It's very appreciable to play that story. It's not the same story, but there is mechanic or some stuff. They are always the same that make the particularity of the show. And even if it's not the same story, it's always a good moment. It's warm for.
It's like you guys decided that the framework of your show was going to have this nostalgic, positive thing, you know? Yeah. People do all sorts of different kinds of shows and, you know, put little changes on them here and there. But I like that your spin on it is this, like, remembering the past about your uncle who you like. You know, it's not like, oh, Uncle Scott, we hate him. What's this? Ugh, something terrible. Ugh. You know, it's all positive. It's like nice. That also is great. It makes me think of the business stuff that we were talking about earlier about things you need to make a show work, how to connect with the audience. The audience bringing objects and then you using those objects to create your show. Perfect. Yeah. Great. You know, because the audience and that way the audience is like invested. They're part of it. And it's one of those things. I hate that we have to do this, but it's one of those things where you have to show the audience. We really are making it up. You know, we couldn't have known that Joe was going to bring this random shoe mm-hmm. and put it and give it to us. You know, how would we know? You know, so I like the idea that, you know, this style is not only like great for the performers, but also great for the audience too. The audience is connected to it. That's fun. Super fun.
Like thank you.
Yeah. What's the name of your troupe? Is it like your troupe just creates different shows and then the name is Uncle Scott's Incredible Attic? Or is it like troupe name presents this?
Oliver Hughes presents Uncle Scott's Incredible Attic, present Trauma or other shows.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that you teach improv now.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Like often in my life, it's an opportunity. You want to teach people? Yeah, okay. I will try it. And so I was maybe a little frightened by that. And now I make it, I really appreciate teaching and sharing knowledge and see how people are playing, understand why they made it, help them to be more confident. It's really something that I appreciate because it helps me to understand how to be more efficient on stage. It's I think it's good to play, to perform, but it's good to teach.
What groups are you teaching and how is the experience for you?
I teach first years people. I teach for adults first year, but it's good. You have to drive them to contain the energy to, I appreciate that. And I've got another class that is experimented improvisers. So we are making, we are working more on technique. We are trying to do some shows, some concepts. We are working, we are going further.
Where do you teach? Do you teach on your own or do you teach through a school?
It's not a school. It's in France we have MJC. It's a home of culture for young people, and it's a home of culture. Okay, and I have a room in which I can teach, improv to my classes.
Oh, okay, but it's you privately, like they pay yes. you, not like yes. they pay a larger company.
No.
Great.
No.
Great. Yeah, I prefer freelance, doing it on my own as well. But where in France are you?
In Nancy, in the east of France. It's a big community. It's a big community of improvisers in Nancy. We are maybe 100 or 200 people making improv in Nancy.
Great.
I don't know if it's big or not, but
it feels big to you.
Yeah. It's I don't know everybody. Maybe.
Yeah. That's how I think of it too. I don't know how many, like numbers wise, there are in Austin, but I don't know everybody, so it's got to be pretty big. Like,
yeah.
That's great. So with your big improv community previous to the current shutdown, were there lots of performance opportunities? Were there lots of show opportunities that you have?
Yeah, this was, we are many groups. There is often improv show in bars, in theaters, or in festivals. So there is many opportunity of making improv in Nancy.
Great. That's always the toughest part. You know, people take classes, and then when they finish with classes, in a lot of cities, there are like not many shows. So all these students are trying to get like two or three roles, you know, there or alternately in some spots, it's all just like the high level experienced teachers that get to perform, and everybody else is just like just taking classes, not ever getting to be on stage. So that it's great that you and your community have lots of different performance spots. That's awesome.
We will see now because the lockdown will probably change the way of show will exist. Lots of bars. We don't know if they will reopen again.
Yeah.
So we don't know. We will see. It's not a very, very funny period. You know that. Everybody know that.
No, but it's real. I mean, it's what's happening. And yeah, every single community is changing. Every group, it's when I talk to people, it's like, okay, how was it? How has it been? What was your before? What is it now? So I guess that's my question. Are you and your friends performing online together, or has it just been take a break?
We took a break. We tried to make a visual performance. Yeah, I'm not. I can't really find. I can't find a real interest. I make that with my classes. We are to keep a link, to keep cohesion with the classes, because they ask me to do that. But we are not going fast. It's slow. Everything is slow. The connection didn't work. We have to wait to do. Is Charlie connected? Oh no, we have to wait. It's unbearable. I don't like that. We don't like that. So we took a pause.
Yeah, I hear you. It's not easy. I haven't done hardly any performing in the past year and a half. I mean, at this point. But, you know, maybe a couple online things, but they're different. You know, it's not improv the way it was. It's performing in its way, but it's like a different kind of thing. So it's okay. I just try to approach it by moment.
I didn't perform since a year and a half too. And when you're on Visio, I mean, it's more brainy. It's not instinctive. You're not playing with you can't really play emotionally. You are more writing a story. It's all in your brain. You have to listen, but you can't really play with your heart, just with your brain. It's okay. It's great too, but I don't like it so much.
Yeah. For me, when you're a performer, there's performing on stage and then there's performing in a film or in a TV. And since I've been staring at my own face for a year and a half on these Zoom screens, I'm like, no, I'm not a film actor. That's not what I'm doing at all. Because my face I glance at myself and I'm like, what is that face? What are you doing? What reaction is that? So I feel like maybe my film career
Not going to happen. Because my face goes into these weird, like I'm in my head. I'm like, you're nodding at him and you're letting him know that you are listening. And I look at myself and I'm like, oh, what have I done? What does that face mean? What he's probably like, what's, but I, in my head, I'm like, yeah, I am paying attention. Like I'm
exactly. I made this on reflection today, and I'm not very well in acting. What I mean, my brain, you are, you know, be sad. Are you feeling sadness when you're really sad? I play it, and it's not the way actors play sadness. You know, so it's a kind of gap. And
I don't know. Sometimes I think. We were talking earlier about the natural ability of comedy. Maybe you get one or the other. Maybe you're either good at comedy or you're good at drama. You know, maybe my serious face is never going to be good because all that this face is made for is weird faces. Like it's just for funny. There's no room for seriousness. Even when I'm trying to be serious, I'm still weird funny face. Like what? Oh man. So you like I, like a lot of us, like most people listening probably are shut down and not doing too many performance things, you know, improv anyway. What right now, what is the thing that is keeping you creatively active? What are you doing that is creatively exciting you in your life, if it's not improv and performing on stage?
I can make improv. I'm working in a psychotherapeutic center, and I make classes for young adolescent with problems, and so. It's one of my favorite things of the week because I know I really help them. I'm shivering when I'm talking about that. It's kind of, it's people that are frightened, they're not confident. They are they do not dare make proposition talking in front of people, and now. Now it work. They are working together. They are happy. They are expressing emotion. Everything is not okay. It's not. I have any pretension, and I do not say that I cured them, but I help them, and I really. It's something that is very important to me, and I. The people, my colleagues, the people with I work with, tell me it's very benefits for it brings them benefits. So I'm very proud of that.
That's so great! What a great opportunity that you are able to have this experience, even though the world is. You know, there's a lot of negative stuff in the world. There's a lot of sadness, but it's so great that you're able to go and have this happy, like enriching experience with these people. Like so great. A lot of people haven't had a chance to, I've taught only online. So the idea that you're going, you know, to the center to help them, I'm like, oh, you're in person. That's great. I'm like, that's so fun. And also how great that you get to work with them and you know, and that you've seen that the work really does help. I think improv could solve everything. I'm a big proponent that improv, in my opinion, improv is a way to open your brain to see the way other people think and feel. In a quick way. Like, yeah, there's compassion. You don't have to know improv to have compassion where you're like, I understand how you feel. I understand. But for you to be able to live it, and also for you to be able to call it up quickly and imagine it quickly, you know, that part of your brain needs to be exercised. And I think once that you exercise that part of your brain that does improv, it opens the doors to other, you know, other things that you can understand, that you can do. You're able to, you know, I love teaching improv because of teaching a person how to work with other people, right? The hardest part, in my opinion, the hardest part of working in the world is dealing with other people, because yeah, we all look at the world differently. But improv is a way of all being on the same page and having manners in which you can connect that you wouldn't have thought to try, right? Until somebody's like, hey, you want to take an improv class? It's just very therapeutic.
Yes, it's really about the connection between people. And that's the way we are working in this center. I make them work together. Just that, it's simple. It's sometimes I think I'm a cheater. I'm paid for that. But no, no, I let them working, maybe not always for improvising. Sometimes they are writing a story and they play it. And I ask them to be creative, to make the story they have written the most incredible that they can use everything that is in the room to put it in the story. They can do whatever they want. It's connection and creativity. It's simple, yeah, but it works, and that's great.
Yeah. I like that too, because it's like earlier you mentioned, you said, and I thought it was really great, I wrote it down, you learned to make stories, not jokes. And I think that the evolution of a person's ability to communicate can go through that. Jokes are just short stories, right? Super short stories. So then you're able to tell longer stories, but you're only able to tell longer stories because you have the confidence that what you're saying is good. And I like that you're giving these kids or any age humans the confidence to tell stories. I think the best way to deal with life is stories, you yeah, know,
like exactly.
Yeah.
It's okay. What we have since the beginning of humanity. We are, we listen to stories. We're making stories. We're creating stories. We are living stories when we're experimenting stuff. It's kind of mini stories. Yeah. There is big, amazing stories, legends. There are stories all around us, and it's what humanity needs.
It's the way our brains make sense of everything. And I think when you are teaching, you know, your improv students, or you're teaching your current students, about how to tell stories and how to create stuff, it's so great that those human beings now can access that part of themselves to be able to, it's how we process the world around us with storytelling. You know, we tell ourselves the story of who we are. We tell ourselves the story of the journey that we've taken. We tell ourselves the story of the world. Well, this is what's happening. You know, we have to make it make sense in our own brains. I just think storytelling is so important to the world.
Yeah, I just can acknowledge that.
So my final question to you is, if you had advice for other performers who are just starting out, especially right now, what could they do to get themselves started as a storyteller, as an improviser, what, or anything, performer?
If I have an advice to give, maybe several advice, they have to work all time on new techniques. They have to enrich with pure technical, to understand a new way of to get a new way of expression for their art. Technique that is musical, cinematographic, comedian or body or everything. New techniques, new tricks. They have to make news, to understand new way of practicing. Maybe enrich the knowledge, looking at movies, reading books, discussing with people, watching documentaries, enrich the brain. And the third, listen to what they are experimenting, what they are feeling, what they are emotionally experimenting. It's the advice that I can give.
Yeah.
Or I can say, believe in your dreams.
Believe in your dreams, and no, no, no. I mean, yes, believe in your dreams, and work on your education, and pay attention to yourself as an artist. I like that last one, the listen to yourself, listen to your own emotions, see where you're at. I think most people don't do that. So that's great advice.
When I create some stuff, and when I'm doing an improvisation, sometimes it makes me remember something I already experimented in my real life, something sad or an emotion when I were angry or all of that. And I put it in the scene. It helps me. It guides me. It's a kind of path. And it's very important to listen to what you are living. I mean, it's it's my way of making. And when I'm making music, I'm just picturing myself. Where am I when I'm playing this sound? When I take my piano, I'm making organ cathedral. I know where I am. If I'm playing an old piano, I am in a rock in Woodstock. I never were here, but I just saw the pictures, I saw the video, the image, and so it's here that I am. I don't know how can I really explain that, but I put always a part of myself in my creation. When I try to make a cooking, we know each other, and improvisers talking about food, and you know, I really love to cook. It's one of my jobs, and I create with our discussion on the page, on the Facebook group, people telling stories. I take the stories they wrote, and I put it in my recipe. I don't know how can I explain it. It's a kind of magic.
Wow.
You have to put some magic in your creation. It's
awesome.
It's not just an addition of this ingredients for music. Or it's, you have to take a part of you and put it in the creation. That's give a kind of that's me. It's real.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it works, sometimes I try to do that, but doesn't work too. Yeah, sometimes it fail. It's
Sometimes you're just going through the motions. You're just making the spaghetti and there's no magic in that spaghetti.
Yeah, you have to try it. It's the sentence. It's my credo. When I teach to people, you don't have to. We are not here to succeed. We are here to try.
So. Oh, that's a good one. That's a solid improv piece of advice there. We're here to try. I like it. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much, Bertrand, for being with me today and being on the podcast. I really appreciate you talking to me. It's been really great.
Thank you, too. I really appreciate that because it was a very, very big challenge. As everybody noticed, I'm not very good at English. I'm sorry for that. And I thank you very much for your patience and your kindness with me to help me not to panic when I don't find my words. That was a very, very great moment. And it was very, I'm glad to know you better.
Yeah, it's great to have, sort of meet face to face, as it were, because, you're, like you said, we've talked online a bunch. We've talked on Facebook but it's nice to see your face. It's nice to connect. It's good. I like it. Great. Thank you so much. So fun.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.